So who am I talking to?
You're talking to Chief Tech Paul Campbell.
And tell me a little bit about the display of aircraft we have here, Paul.
We've got the Jaguar aircraft, GR3s. They are been at Costa for about 10 years now. They landed here in 2007 from active duty. And since then, they've been part of Cosford to help train the engineers, the future engineers of the Air Force. We have, up till recently, been using them for taxi training. For the new engineers coming through, we use them to teach them how to taxi, and they get an awareness of what it's like to work around a live aircraft with live engines running. Also with the engineering officers, we would do a scenario with them where they would have to be confronted with a situation where the aircraft would have a fault with the aircrew on board, and they would have the pressure of the engines running, and they would have to make high-pressured decisions on whether to let the aircraft go or not. But just recently, the aircraft have reached their limit in age, so they can't run anymore.
How old are the Jaguars now?
To be honest, I'm not 100% sure. Maybe 30, 40 years old. So they're an old aircraft. But
I mean, presumably the technology and the all the sort of instrumentation and the whole sort of engineering of that plane, does it carry through to modern day aircraft?
Yeah, some things do. The basics of the control services and stuff like that, that's all very similar, and how they're powered, which is hydraulically and electrically, is very similar to the new aircraft. Inside the cockpit, yes, it's a little bit dated, but however, it's still a really good asset for
not a steering wheel anymore now.
No, yes, no, exactly. So, but it gives ultimately the young generation coming through some appreciation of what aircraft are like.
So the Jaguars now are not active, they're not flying at all?
No, they're not. Unfortunately, no. They've had to be grounded. They've hit their life time.
They've reached a life expectancy.
Exactly.
I mean, the last time I was here last year was when we saw the Vulcan bomber flying for the last time.
Yeah.
I mean, the sad thing is that plane, you know, it sort of warms the heart.
It
has its own particular majestic sort of outlook on life, even though it's the most powerful aircraft when it opens up those Vulcan engines, of course.
Very, very much so. I remember coming here as a young child and watching it and remembering the roar of the engines and stuff. And it is sad not to have it here anymore. But I guess, you know, once things hit the end of their life, then that's it, really.
So we went from Jaguar to Tornado.
Yes.
And then Tornado, presumably, out of Eurofighter and Typhoon.
Typhoon, yeah, exactly, yeah.
But obviously Tornadoes are still very much an active service.
They are, yes, yeah, the GR4s are. They're still doing their bit around the world and still a very capable aircraft. I was lucky enough to work on both variants of them, being an F3 and a GR4.
But as an engineer yourself?
Yes, as an engineer.
Did you fly at all?
I've been in the back seat of an F3, gone supersonic, and I was very lucky to have that opportunity.
Did that make the hair on the back
very
of your
much
head
so, yes.
stand
was,
on end, did it?
Yes, it very much so. It was a huge. I was very proud to be allowed to be to sit in the back, and how powerful. I never realised how powerful they were until you're sat in it and you're actually doing it. You know,
did it bring a smile to your face?
Oh, very much so. Yeah, yeah. And it reinvigorated.
I was thinking about sitting alongside a top flight World Rally Championship rally driver in a rally car. To me, that is on the ground sensation that you probably would get if you were flying upside down in a Typhoon jet.
Oh God, yeah. I mean, we did. We were at 1,000 feet. I did it in Cyprus. We were at 1,000 feet, and we went supersonic, and then over the sea, and then went up. We were at 1,000 feet, and then within a couple of seconds, we were at 12,000 feet, and then turned out.
I've often driven past RAF Leeming and seen these tornadoes sort of come down the runway and take off, and then suddenly sort of go straight up and disappear into the clouds. I mean, it's boys' own stuff, isn't it?
It is, yeah. It's fantastic, yeah. It's I would imagine the Typhoon is another level on from the
Did
the
you ever hanker to be a pilot?
I did, yeah. I would love to have done it. The only downside for me is I've got bad eyesight, so I wear contact lenses.
Doesn't help.
So that was the limiting factor for me. But, I've previously worked on C-17s as a GE, so as part of the crew, and I'm going back to that in September. So to be part of a C-17 crew as an engineer. So
C-17s again.
C-17s are Globemaster, so it's the largest aircraft that we've got, cargo aircraft in the Air Force, Boeing aircraft, and I'm biased, but I think it's a fantastic aircraft.
When we look at the RAF Red Arrows and the Hawks they're flying, that is an old generation Hawk by present standards, isn't it?
It is, yes. From what I understand, I think they're upgrading it very soon. If not, they've not done it already. But yes, it's a fairly old aircraft now. Yeah.
Sure. The modern day Hawks, of course, are very, very potent force in terms of training.
Yes.
And I guess also, presumably, you have young engineers who have grown up and come through the engineering sort of, if you like, ethos and the training here at RAF Cosford to go on and work on those Hawks as well.
Yes, yeah, for sure. There's a lot of the guys who've come through here on the Red Arrows engineering team now. They're very privileged to be on there and travel the world with the display. And it's an inspiration to young people that maybe want to join the Air Force. They could actually be part of that.
I mean, it's a glamorous job, we know that, being part of the Red Arrows team, but we also know that all of the guys that are flying and you guys on the ground have obviously been involved in possibly battleground environments as well.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I spent a fair bit of time in Afghanistan when I was on the C-17s. I did over 200 landings in Afghanistan. And yes, you do get exposed to a lot of not so nice things, but you know, it's an experience and you take it away with you.
That's all part and parcel of being in the RAF.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, sure. And
when you say 200 landings, I mean, over what period was that then?
That was through when we were starting to draw down in Afghanistan. So we were, as a C-17 crew, you go in and out of Afghanistan, either replenishing all the supplies to the frontline troops and stuff, or even taking in spare parts for aircraft. And then obviously when the drawdown came, we had the massive task of emptying Afghanistan of all the equipment that we've over time put in there. So it took many, many months in and out twice a day to get all this equipment back.
What about Chinooks and servicing those planes in that sort of environment?
Again, it can be very stressful, and the weather environment can be horrendous as well. So, especially in Afghanistan, you're looking at maybe 50 degree heat, very dry
sandstorms.
Yeah, and then potentially we had not so long ago there was a big hailstorm that damaged a load of aircraft as well. So you get all
sorts down to the Met Office. Yes.
Well, yes. I mean, so you get a huge swing of different weather. So.
The one thing I think about the Chinook, and I love the sound of a Chinook. Mm. It gives you a lot of reassurance. I think in a battle environment, it probably gives you a lot of encouragement, a lot of comfort in many ways, and security.
Very much so. They hear the blades coming in and potentially picking you out of a hostile environment. Yes. So, but they were a key aircraft within Afghanistan, I think.
And Hercules, of course, as well. I mean, I've seen Hercules flying very low level, and again, they're a very graceful aircraft, but they're a very valuable part of the RAF's whole program, aren't
they? Yes, very much so, especially within Afghanistan, doing internal flights, restocking the supplies for to the FOBs and stuff like that. They were invaluable, and because of the kind of aircraft that they are, they can land pretty much anywhere on dirt tracks and stuff. So
training on all of the particular aircraft we talked about would all basically start here at RAF Cosford.
Yes, very much so.
Home of engineering.
Home of engineering, and I think we're very proud to supply what we can with what we've got, and it hopefully sets them up for when they do get out to the frontline squadrons, and they've got useful people that they can mould themselves and do a bit of on the job training to the specific role of aircraft. So.
Talking to Wing Commander Chris Jones, and of course he was saying that he actually came through RAF Cosford as a trainee.
Yes.
You likewise?
Yes, and me, yes, I did. So I've been in 22 years now, so I did two trips.
22 years as a fully trained engineer?
Yes, well, yeah, pretty much, with a bit of training at the start. So I did two trips, two visits. So when I came out of basic training, I came here to Cosford and did a year, and then went into the wider Air Force for nearly 2.5 years, then came back and did my what they call fitters course and came out as a junior technician there.
But the one thing we have to remember, that every single aircraft that flies here at RAF Cosford Air Show flies through the RAF and sorties in any environment you're working in, you may not necessarily be flying that aircraft much as you may want to do, but if you're on the ground as air crew, you're just as important, probably even in many ways more so, because you have a lot of pressure to get those aircraft, if they are basically operating in an operational situation, they have to be up and flying as soon as possible.
As soon as possible, for sure, yeah. I mean, it's... especially when you're in Afghanistan, especially on the helicopters, you need to get these aircraft serviced and serviceable for their next role, and particularly that role maybe, in a shorter period of time, because someone may need to be casivacked out of that situation. And I know the C-17 crew, when I worked on them, even when they came back to Bryce Norton for a turnaround service or whatever, the maximum they're on the ground for is 8 to 6 hours, six
you're
to eight hours.
Much time at all.
No, because they're such a valuable asset, they need it all the time. So,
but that puts the whole thing in perspective. Okay, you couldn't fly much as you wanted to. You've been in the back seat of a jet, which knocked you sideways and made you feel even more upset about not being able to fly one. But then again, I think if you're sitting in the back seat and being flown by a pilot who actually is fully trained, that to me is as exciting as anything.
Oh gosh, yeah, it was phenomenal. And as an engineer, because you don't experience that very often, if at all, it puts everything in perspective. It makes you feel more proud of the work that you are doing to get that aircraft up in the air, and when you feel the power of those engines, think, wow, this is amazing.
How technically demanding is a Eurofighter, the Typhoon, as an engineering product, if you like?
I would say I've not worked on it, so I can't say for sure, but I would imagine...
Would you not have any of them here at all?
To train on, or
yeah, to train on.
No, because it's such a valuable asset. They need them on the front line. So, we've got. I know here we've got computer-based training, which is very similar to Eurofighter software.
So simulator type training.
Yeah. And to be honest, the newer aircraft can be a little bit easier to work on because they've got computers to tell you what's going on, and you can interrogate it more like a computer. Well, just like a computer, really, and it'll tell you how to fix things and what items to change and stuff. But that's why the younger guys coming through are probably more switched onto it, because they're used to working on computers and stuff, and
they probably feel quite cool about it, don't they?
Yeah, I'd like to think so.
What about reliability? I mean, the background to all of this, of course, is the fact that be it a helicopter, be it a fighter jet, be it a Hercules transport or whatever, reliability is a key factor in basically making your job easier as well, surely.
Yeah, for sure. Certain aircraft are more reliable than others. Again, depending on what environment you're working in, if they're designed to work in hot temperatures and stuff, then they'll work better.
Are they designed with that in mind as well?
I think so. I would imagine so. Specifically, all I can say about the C-17 likes to be used all the time. If you start shutting it down and then start
whatever
it back
conditions
up again.
Other words, it can't fly because it's raining, or it can't fly because there's a sandstorm or whatever, then it's not doing its job.
No, exactly, just keep it continuously moving, and it likes to work then. So
what about your career here at RAF Cosford in sunny, we're just on the outskirts of Wolverhampton, aren't we, near All Brighton?
Yes. So for me, like I say, I've got up until September, and I then return back to Bryce Norton and work on the C-17 again. But so that'll complete nearly 3.5 years that I've done here on this one tour. So,
engineering, RAF, tell me about it. What would you say to somebody outside who's maybe thinking about a young guy or girl, bearing in mind the fact that, We're not talking about it all be for men. Maybe we want girls coming in here as well. I mean, what would you say to anybody who's probably looking at a career, and how would you sort of propose that they should look at, RAF engineering and RAF Cosford as an engineering base to train at?
I think if you want to get into engineering, the Air Force is an amazing tool to get you into it. The training is second to none. Opportunities that you get within the Air Force and experiences you won't get anywhere else. I think it sets you up for life, really. It gives you the confidence, it gives you the tools to go on to whatever you want to do. So you've got the option to make a career of it, or you've got the option to just take as much as you can from the Air Force, because they provide you with a huge amount of tools and experiences, like I said, not just engineering, but there's adventure training and all sorts.
And also it's a career, isn't it?
Yes, it is, yeah. Yeah.
And even at the end of your career, then you've got a lot of engineering skills and background that you can actually use in other jobs. I mean, I know people who've probably gone into work for people like telecoms and that sort of type of stuff.
Yeah, definitely. Or into onto the rail network. There's a lot of opportunities within there. Even if you have the time, it's enough spare time within the Air Force to get your aircraft licenses, then you can work on the civilian side of things as well. So there's a lot of opportunities.
Fantastic. Pleasure to talk. And can I wish you all the very best wherever you go to, and good luck when you go back to Brasenort.
Oh, that's great. Thank you very much. Thank you.